So this seemed like a good idea before the sun came up. Like, I was thinking, I've got to try and make all this gear work when I'm away from home for reasons I'll go into more detail in a moment. So I thought I'll come down the back and I'll set it all up and it'll be fine. I'll put on my normal black t-shirt and then the sun came out. So I'm going to talk more about what I'm doing this setup in a moment, because it is a little bit hacked together, if I'm honest, which is not too bad, but I'll maybe seek some suggestions. But just to begin with, let me start with the sponsor stuff as usual. Sponsor this week is Microsoft, in particular, the Microsoft Reactor. Now, the Microsoft Reactor is somewhere where, back in the day, back when I could travel, I used to go and spend time in various reactors around the world, and the reactors were great places for startups to get access to people and technology and ideas. People like me would come in and spend some time with them as well, which was, as best I could tell, it was useful when I did it. Of course, it's a little bit different these days. But the Reactor is a big part of helping startups get themselves moving and get their cyber things up and running, be they Microsoft technologies or others as well. Microsoft is a very different place these days to what it was in the past. So link here from sponsor. Join the Microsoft Reactor community for workshops and events to expand your skill set across a range of technologies and topics. So big thanks to Microsoft for that one. Now, I'm also sitting here with my laptop. I've got everything rigged up through the laptop, so I can see comments. So g'day to Burton, Christian from Norway. I'll come back and talk about Norway in a bit too. Hello from Slovenia. Wow, there's a place I haven't been. Before I move on the sponsor thing as well, I put out a tweet yesterday. I think I pimped it again this morning. I don't have a sponsor for next week. Next week, I am going to do the 5-part epic blog series on IoT. So it's probably going to be the biggest week on the blog of the year. So if there is a company out there, this is not like individual say hi to mum kind of sponsorship. There's a company out there looking for sponsorship. Do get in touch with me, probably best off via Twitter DM. Otherwise, there are always backfills, shall we say, of organizations willing to pick up the empty spots. Now, on to other things. So how have I made this work? So this is the usual camera that I've been using in my office. So it's a Sony A6400 with the Sigma lens. And what I've done is just run it through the normal cam link into my laptop. And what I'm also running now, I'll put my coffee down so I don't spill it all over my laptop, because logistics are a little bit different today, is I got a Rode Wireless Go. So this is what the Wireless Go looks like. There's another one that looks just like this, sitting just on top of the flash mount on top of the other camera. And they wirelessly go to each other. And for those watching, you'll see that I've got a little lapel mic, which is a smart lav, a Rode smart lav, which I've had a couple of in the past, and they're a good little lapel mic. What it means is that I don't need to be right next to the camera in order to make things work, other than the fact is it a short focal lens or a long focal lens or whatever it is, but basically it doesn't zoom and I've got to be close to it. So, maybe I didn't need wireless. Plus, of course, I've got the whole laptop sitting here with the USB cable, which goes into the cam link, which goes into the camera over there and picks it up like a normal camera. Now, I thought all this would be fine. And then I came down here with my laptop on the Wi-Fi and I ran a speed test and I was getting like 2 megabits up. And I sort of went, but I got the Ubiquiti stuff all through the house. Like, why is this a problem? And then I remembered one of the things I've done recently is I've replaced all of the like traditional great big dome, when I say great big, like dinner plate size, dome access points throughout the house. I've replaced them with the in-wall units because they're much neater. They sit on the wall. It's not sitting on the floor or something like that. And they provide coverage just great for a room, but not a whole lot beyond there. So what I've ended up doing, this is how much I've like rigged this whole thing back up together. I realized that I've got one of the, one of the Unify Mesh access points, the big flat panel ones. I wrote a blog post about this years ago where I used to run it down to another access point on my jetty so I had Wi-Fi on my jet ski, which, as you know, is important. Anyway, so that mesh unit is now in my boat shed and it uses Ethernet over power, because the boat shed is like under a massive concrete slab and it has no connectivity or anything else. So Ethernet over power back into my server room. So the entire chronology of how you're seeing me coming to you is I'm going through the Sigma lens into the Sony A6400 camera over a micro HDMI. And incidentally, every other micro HDMI cable I have doesn't work. Only the one which I had like carefully cable tied all the way through my laptop or all the way through my desktop setup upstairs actually works. So anyway, micro HDMI into the cam link, into USB, into my laptop, Wi-Fi, into the boat shed, into the Ubiquiti mesh point, into the Ethernet over power unit in the boat shed, through the power lines, and then out through the other Ethernet, I'm having to be careful over this, out through the other Ethernet over power line in the server room, and then into the network. Now, why do I make it so damn hard? Because I do have a 5G device, which I've gotten gigabit speeds on here in this exact location before. As soon as I tether this via Wi-Fi, I'm not getting gigabit fast speeds on my laptop. I was only getting like literally 600 kilobytes a second or something. So that didn't work very well. And then I was like, that's fine, I'll just wire it in. So I go like lightning to USB-C and well, that doesn't work because it won't see it as a network device. Maybe it needs lightning to like the old USB. What is it, USB-B? I even forget now. That didn't work either. So I don't know how many problems I've actually solved versus made. I think the only thing I know for sure out of this, USB-A, okay, thank you, a comment there from Nick007. The only thing I've actually solved here is I know I need to get another one of these USB cables, micro HDMI to normal HDMI. Now, I've got one called, if I look at the cable without unplugging it, called Ugreen. And the Ugreen ones, I assume, are just high speed enough to be able to run. This is in 4K, it's just 1080p. But one of the ones that came with one of my Raspberry Pis, like I tried using that, wouldn't work. And I'm just like crazily changing cables. One with a GoPro wouldn't work. Only the Ugreen one. So, fun times. Now, the comments here. When COVID goes away, you're welcome, Slovenia. Yeah, that would be nice. Hey, when COVID goes away, you're welcome here too. It's quite nice here. So this is my backyard. This is on the Gold Coast in Australia, for those of you not from this part of the world, which is a little bit like Southern California style weather, I guess, but also looked at a little bit like Florida. I know I'm just picking US examples here. So pick up me, like maybe south of Spain kind of thing for the Europeans. But a little bit Florida insofar as a lot of people traditionally sort of came here to retire. But sixth largest city in the country. In fact, the high rises behind are sort of part of our CBD, and there's other ones a little bit closer to that side, which is Surfers Paradise, named for obvious reasons. And this is just a super cool spot. We've got more canals here than Venice and Amsterdam combined. Fun Gold Coast fact. So living on the water like this, there must be tens of thousands of houses in a city of 500,000 people that are actually on the water. So cool spot. Feel free to ask me any questions because I've only got the one big topic to talk about today as well. So a little bit like last week, if you want to do any of the AMA stuff, please let me know. Okay, so the big one is the blog post I published last night, my time. So just for reference, it's, what are we, nearly 10 a.m. here at the moment. And the corresponding data reach named CIT Zero Day. And this is sort of interesting for many reasons. And I have woke, as expected, to an overflowing inbox, which I'm largely just filing away for reasons I'll explain shortly. But basically, this is a collection of data breaches, a collection of more than 23,000 different data breaches. And I'm just going to pop on over to the blog post I wrote here about it, just to reference a few points. This was sent to me almost simultaneously by multiple different parties, at least three or four different parties, all popped up and went, hey, here's this thing. And it had been in the news. In fact, the very first sentence I have on my blog post is a link to Catalin Campanu's story. And in here, he talks about 23,000 plus, I think it's 23,600 something data breaches. And the fact that they were all indexed by this now defunct website, which has been defunct since, I believe, sometime last year. And the problem is that it seems that all the data this web service had, they called it a data breach index service. I think it's more nefarious than that. I'll come back to that. But this now defunct web service has all the data has been leaked and is now obviously in extensive circulation. Now, is it a data breach index service? But look at Have I Been Pwned. So Have I Been Pwned, we're approaching 500 data breaches there. We're also approaching 7th birthday. I think that will happen in about 2 weeks from now. So 500 data breaches, and for each one of those incidents, I go through, I verify it, I establish it's legitimate. If I need to, I do disclosure to the organization involved. There's only email addresses, all the passwords sit separately so that they can be used for things like Pwned passwords, but there's never a credential pair, which could obviously disadvantage someone. And that's the approach I take with Have I Been Pwned. Now, inevitably, what this service did is it made a business out of selling credential pairs. And the way the data was structured, there's 23,600 different RAR files. Now, each one of these RAR files refers to a website. So the example I gave in here is a website called Chordy, which is a guitar forum. I didn't even drill far enough to figure out exactly what version of what forum software it was running, but it looks like a typical, you're running old forum software, you set up half a decade ago, you left it, vulnerabilities, someone's owned it, you know, pulled the data out. So someone's pulled out email address and hash pairs. Now what's happened then is someone's gone through, done a whole bunch of hash cracking. And when there's a lot of MD5 in there, whether it be salted or unsalted or other weak hashing algorithms, a lot of hash is gonna get cracked. So that the business model of this service seems to have been providing credential pairs with both the hashes and the planes where they're being cracked, and also a bunch of hashes which couldn't have been cracked or which weren't cracked by whoever was responsible for this. Now, Chordy was one. There are many, many, many others. And in this blog post, I sort of go through and sort of go, okay, well, look, I'm not going to check 23,600 websites. I'm not going to check 6 websites. I frankly don't have the time for that. But I did go through and check several. And Chordy, for example, was a legitimate breach insofar as email addresses in the alleged, I'm air quoting for the people listening to the podcast, alleged data did exist on the website. Now, one of the emails I had overnight is from the owner of Chordy. Now, I haven't actually even read it in detail, but I think he said something like he's from Finland. Could I get in touch? So, yeah, I'm going to have a chat to him and try and figure out what's actually happened here. But I think this is just a case where his service got breached possibly many, many, many years ago. His customer's data is out there floating around. He's now going to need to do disclosure. As for the other 23,600 something websites, they probably should be doing some form of disclosure as well. The thing is that they've really got to get their hands on the data to be sure that it is a breach of their service, or they go through and they take a whole bunch of their customer email addresses. And as I said in the blog post, if they're worried about sharing any PII, which I don't save or do anything like that with anyway, if they're worried about that, go and grab some Mailinator addresses. No one on Mailinator is expecting privacy. The public mailboxes. Chuck them into Have I Been Pwned. If you keep getting hits, probably start with old ones because you don't know when the breach actually happened, then that's a pretty solid indication that you've been pwned. So, large amount of data, 226 million email addresses in there. They went into Have I Been Pwned as a breach. I really wanted to be able to kill any useful, what's the right way to put this? To be able to kill the usefulness of the credentials. So how can we make sure that out of all of these credential pairs, how can we make sure that services can stop other people from using these credentials and then consequently having a problem themselves? So I have updated Pwned passwords. It's up to V7 now. It's 600 million something passwords in total. And just to be clear as well, it's not all sit 0 day. So I did have a corpus of other breaches being built up with new passwords that were available in plain text. So I always need passwords in plain text for Pwned passwords. So I'm now at 613 million real world passwords previously exposed in data breaches. Now, I'm just kind of curious as well. I haven't looked at this myself yet, but I'll give everyone else the stats because I'm sure many people will be interested in this, but I wonder just how many hits that has now had on it. If I go to Cloud, it's going to ask me to re-authenticate and 2FA do all of the other stuff because security. But I'm interested to see how many hits did Pwned passwords get. So I shared a figure in the blog post showing that Pwned passwords has had about 850 million hits in the last month. Now it's peaking at about 34 million a day, but I'm just enormously happy with that because it's a totally free service. There's no API auth. There's no rate limits. It's designed, I knew I'd get too afraid on this. It's designed in every single way just to be as usable as possible for everyone. So that is why I've put all this SIP zero-day stuff into own passwords, because I want to make sure that organizations can immediately start to say, okay, this stuff that started circulating earlier this month, let's go through now and make sure that no one's using those passwords. So that's what's in there. Now I'm finally into my analytics and I can see, where are we, pwn passwords. If I look at requests, let's go requests for the last 24 hours. What's happened there? Okay, 31 million something requests in the last 24 hours, which is not the biggest day there's been in the last month. So the last month worth of data is actually about 417 million requests. Now, of course, have I been pwned? Got absolutely hammered once this data went in. I'm going to talk about something that came up there in terms of a performance problem, which I need to fix. It has had, in the last 24 hours, 434,000 unique visitors to have I been pwned in the last day, which is pretty cool. Then again, my blog's had well over 100,000 as well. So good week for Microsoft to be on the sponsor page. I just realized I didn't put sunscreen on, and you don't get away with that for very long in Australia. Not at this time of year. All right, so issues with have I been pwned. So a few people reported some performance issues with the domain search. Now, the email address search and pwned passwords is all hitting a Cloudflare cache followed by a Azure function serverless. So pwn passwords in particular is massively, massively cached. 99 point something percent of requests under normal conditions, not when I just flushed the cache yesterday, but under normal conditions, get served by cache. And only a small fraction then go to the origin, and then they're served by serverless functions, which scale infinitely. Front page of have I been pwned is served from cache. The API behind the front page is somewhat cached, but of course everyone's searching for their own email address, so not a lot of cache efficiency, but then goes to a serverless API, which scales, so far, touch wood, infinitely. The domain search is still running in the app service. I haven't kind of carved that off and put it in functions yet. So unfortunately, what it means is that when something really big goes out, and I sent over 600,000 emails last night, I think it was something like 555,000 went to individual subscribers, and then the rest went to domain monitoring people. The domain searches are computationally expensive because it's pulling a lot of data back in some cases from obviously a very, very large corpus. Actually, what are we up to now? 10 point a lot of billion. 10.467 billion accounts. Crikey. So that's a lot. So that was slowing down a little bit. I had turned off autoscale some time ago because I found it just bouncing around between different scale limits. And when I turned it off, no one complained until yesterday. There was a small period there where some people running domain searches did get gateway timeouts. So that should have been fixed now. That is on my to-do list to carve off into functions, which will then permanently solve that problem. I'm just going to pause a second and look at the comments that we've got here, and then I'll keep going on some of the feedback I've got on this. So there's a question here. Ali Robinson, are you on Telstra? Do you ever get decent speeds out of hotspot? So I'm on Telstra for my mobile, and on 5G, yeah, I get gigabit on 5G, which is actually pretty impressive. For my broadband, I'm on Aussie broadband, and I can max out at about 58 megabit down and I think about 25 up here. And that's all I can do unless I pay something like, it was like an exorbitant amount, a couple of thousand dollars to just to get a quote to upgrade like fiber to the home instead of to the node. So for the most part, as I said before, to be honest, 58 down, it's rare that that's not fast enough. And I know that sounds kind of odd from someone who always wants to go fast in general, not just on the internet, but watching high-def video multiple people at a time, downloading most data breaches so long as they don't get into the many tens or hundreds of gigabytes, no problems. Uploading high-def video, no problems, so long as it's like I don't have to get it done immediately kind of thing. Yeah, so for the most part, that's just fine. Other questions here. Don't really big on travel. Okay. Now, Chris says, I know you said you won't say which side each record is from. What about giving a count of how many times an email appears in the entire set? Would that be possible, or too hard basket? So, let me talk about this. And the first thing to remember is that this is something I do in my spare time. This remains a pet project. And obviously, I went through a whole process last year of looking at, do I find a new home for it? That didn't go through. There are bits of it which are in the open sourcing pipeline that I'll talk about more in the future. But this is something I run for passion in available time. So even when I look at things like the main search feature I just spoke about slowing down, I have to fix that. But if I don't, it still kind of works. No one's paying for it anyway. Doesn't really matter. Now, that said, the difficulties in doing this. So at the moment, it's a very, very simple data structure within Have I Been Pwned. So there's table storage is the underlying data structure, has been since day one. Each domain has a petition. There is a very large petition called gmail.com. There is a very small petition called troyhunt.com. In each petition, each alias on that domain that's been seen in a breach has its own row. So there is going to be a johnrowe@gmail.com. So we have a petition key, gmail.com. We have a row key, John. We then have a collection, so it's just one column that is a delimited string, which is a collection of data breaches the person has peered in. Without checking, I bet john@gmail.com has been in a lot because people use that as a test email address. So there might be a semicolon delimited string that's got, let's say, 100 different records in it. Now, that works fine. It's very, very fast. It's very, very cheap. And it scales, for all intents and purposes, infinitely. At least so far. If we move to the concept of saying there is other data specific to each record in a data breach, it has a fundamental impact on multiple things. Number one, it has a fundamental impact on data ingestion. So I can no longer take, in this case, a collection of tens of thousands of files and point a little app I've written that just enumerates through every file and regexes out all the email addresses. I can no longer do that. And that is actually a massive, massive thing, because now what I've got to do is on a per case basis, I've got to say there is some other data which is contextually relevant. When I extract the email address, I also need to extract that contextually relevant data. Now that starts to make things very difficult for the ingestion process. Then there's, incidentally, there's a rattle gun in the background. I'm getting new tires on the GTR. Different topic. You might keep hearing a rattle gun. Then there is the question of, okay, how do I now model that data structure in table storage? So I can no longer just say john@gmail.com has been in these data breaches. I need to say for this particular data breaches, there's now like another dimension to the array. There are other data attributes that could be, per the suggestion here, the number of times the person has appeared in it. It could also be the name of the file the person was in. It could also be, as many other people have requested over the years, other pieces of potentially PII, personally identifiable information, about John. Because John wants to know not just was his birth date exposed, but what was his birth date. And you just start to go down this absolute rabbit hole, slippery slope of all the different ways we could slice and dice this data. And there is no single way that doesn't make a huge amount of extra work on ingestion, a huge amount of extra work on storage and querying, and a huge amount of extra work trying to actually backfill 10.4 something billion records worth of data. Now, for the most part, a data breach like, let's say, what do we have? Let's just say LinkedIn. Data breach like LinkedIn, you don't really need any other data. You know the service, LinkedIn. You know your email address was in there. You can now go to LinkedIn and you can fill that gap. It's sites like this sit zero day thing, which are the problem, because in a case like that, I understand what everyone's saying. It's like, I need more data in order to be able to figure this out. But as I've also said, because of course, this is what I got bombarded with, even though I put a really, really clear bit at the end of the blog post, it's like, don't contact me over this. I'm not going to reply to your emails. But I get all these people saying, I need more information. And I understand it, but those are the reasons why I can't do it. Now, The other thing is, and I've said this in the blog post, if you're doing this right, account management, password management, it doesn't matter. And the reasons are simply this. So let's define right. Right is a password manager. I would like people to use 1Password. I've said that for the last decade. Now that I'm on the board of advisors, I'm kind of a little bit obligated to say that as well. But it's consistent messaging is my point. Use 1Password, the password manager. not a single password. I've got to feel like I've got to keep quantifying that. Use the 1Password password manager. Make strong, unique passwords on every site. Generate them. Make them random. Make them different on every site. If your email address then appears in a breach like this, what's the problem? It's in that one breach. You are sandboxed. That's the only place you're going to have the problem. And inevitably, and I appreciate the question here about has the email address actually appeared multiple times. By the way, that would have also been painful to do with this breach, because the same email address appears in the same breach multiple times, because it's in like the source file and then the cracked file and then the decrypted file. So even for, say, Chordy, one person might have one account, but the email address would still appear there multiple times. So point is that if you're sandboxing all of these services and you're in a data breach within this whole collection, surprisingly, I wasn't in it. I actually felt a little bit hurt. I was like, where's my email? But no, I wasn't in there. If you're sandboxing it all, then your risk is extremely small. If you're generating passwords that are actually randomly generated, then it's also not getting cracked. Even if it's MD5 with no salt, if you're getting into 1Password and say, give me 30, 40, 50 different characters in my password, no one's brute forcing their way through that. So what's left is this whole thing about, okay, well, I might have had other personally identifiable attributes exposed by Cordy. You know, maybe the guitar music I like has been disclosed there, and I would actually like to know that. And I get that. I get that gap. But they're the reasons why I can't do it at the moment. Okay, what else we got in here? Okay, good morning from Melbourne, celebrating 21 days. Melbourne has knocked it out of the park. I am so impressed with Melbourne. So for the international viewers, Melbourne's the capital city down in Victoria. They had a second wave that hit them pretty hard. They went from something like 100 cases of COVID, active cases, up to 7,000 something, I think. They've just gone 3 weeks in a row with no new cases. And I think their active cases, if they're not zero, it's like one or two or three or something. So good on you guys. And I'm sure that would have been an absolute miserable period there where you're all stuck indoors. But that is a fantastic result. Josh King, aggregate collections like this are frustrating. Have been using unique passwords for years, but no way of knowing one of them is tied up in the collection. Mate, if you're using unique passwords, it's kind of not a problem. Like this is the point I'm making. If it's unique passwords, the extent of your problem is very, very small. And when we say aggregate collections are frustrating, one of the things that's frustrating for me is when people come back and say, this is useless. So, okay, there is something out there that you don't find of use. You don't need to come and tell me that you don't find it of use. It goes back to that guitar lessons blog post from a couple of weeks ago. Time and time again, when I've run polls and I've said, when things like this happen or when it's a spam list, do you want to know about it? It's like 80, 85% of people say, yes, they do. If you don't, and you get one of these emails, notification emails from Have I Been Pwned, as I said to someone in the comments, there's an unsubscribe link and I will refund your money. Also, there is no money. So again, I'm doing this as a free service in my spare time. If you don't like it, don't use it. You don't have to tell me you don't like it. And to be clear, Josh, I'm not saying that you're saying that you don't like it. And I do hear your frustration, and I agree that there is frustration in not knowing the source of it. This is incidentally one of the reasons why I do retain these data breaches as well. I don't just extract the emails and chuck everything away. I do retain them because I'm not ruling out the ability to do this in the future, but it won't be just me on my own in my spare time that does it. That's just not going to be feasible. Okay, what else is in here? Johan, I suspect. What is your opinion on using device IDs and typing patterns as a 2FA method? Should be better user experience if user on a new device or typing mismatch, send SMS or login confirmation. Okay, so let me reread this. If you're using device IDs and typing patterns. So we're talking about biometric heuristics in terms of things like how do people type? Are they still typing in the same way? There's a lot of very, very clever anti-automation software out there that does look at a whole bunch of indicators of potentially malicious or non-organic usage of services. So that could be anything from typing patterns to the way the mouse moves on the screen to where you touch on a screen if it's a smartphone, to your IP address and the reputation of that, to your user agent, to where you are geographically, to the ISP that you're using. There's all of these different things. If you think about everything that you could observe, if you could run a bit of JavaScript on someone's browser and you knew their IP address and you got all the request headers and things that come with every click, if you had all of that together and you can get smart enough, and then you had a really, really good matrix of IP addresses and what were good ones and what were bad ones, organizations like Cloudflare can do this really well because they've got such a massive footprint on the web. There's a lot of clever stuff you can do. Speaking very, very high level in response to Johan, I like the idea of heuristics that can happen organically without interaction from the user. Now, you've mentioned 2FA. 2FA is a pain in the ass. There, I said it. I've got that off my chest. Everyone there is spitting their coffee out of the screen. It's a pain in the ass because by design, it creates friction. And the pain in the ass is, if you don't believe me, go and try and set it up. I'm going to use a very stereotypical demographic here, but go and try and set it up for your parents. I have tried this. It's not fun trying to explain 2FA and how it works. So my point is, and as it relates to Johan's comment, look, I have 2FA on all my things. I turn it on. I stuff it up. Every now and then, I haven't migrated an auth token. The Microsoft Authenticator, I'm still not sure I've got it working properly on my new phone. Oh, I took it when you're watching, right? I got that. All of that is painful by design. So things that can happen organically and discreetly without interjecting in the user experience, and if we can get false positives down, and if we can get things like challenges that are presented to users down as well so that their experience is better, then I'm all for that. And again, it's a very, very high level response as well. I appreciate it's not an exact science. Burton, how's the public release of Have I Been Paying Code going? So when I actually get to the point where I can talk about this in more detail, you'll see why it's a lengthy period. There are multiple discussions and meetings ongoing. I actually have what I think is an epic use case to take one very discrete part of Have I Been Pwned that's easily open source and build something which is going to be super, super cool. And I'm drafting up a blog post on that, and I'm waiting to get that approved by some parties, and then I'll be able to publish it. Now, I'm not going to even put timelines on it. I'd love to say I'd get it done this year, but because I'm going to go away on holidays for a long time shortly, I don't know if that's going to happen. But it is progressing. It is not forgotten. Trust me. I think about it every single day. Rambling Geet always misses the start of my streams, needs more notice. They're a bit ad hoc, mate. So I didn't know when this one was going to begin because I spent an hour mucking around trying to get this camera working. And I'm still just waiting for the moment where the battery on either the camera or one of the lav mics or my laptop dies. My laptop, at least I can see. I've got an hour 22 there, so that'll cover us. But yeah, look, they remain a little bit ad hoc. They just have to fit my schedule. Christian Anderson's replying here to Johan. If you've hurt your hand and have to type another way, I'll just scroll past that. Oh, where do we get that? If you hurt your hand and have to type with your other hand, you cannot log in. So it is a bit more sophisticated than that, because there are multiple scenarios here. I was just making my coffee while I type notes on my phone with one hand. That's a different typing pattern to usual. But it is the same IP address, and it's the same device. And it could have a cookie set from the last time I was there. So we could have other indicators that increase the level of confidence in the legitimacy, such that if one was just a little bit off, it might not be enough to go, this isn't the right person. So the technology does have to be more sophisticated than that. SMS via 2FA via SMS is basically broken. All right, Christian, I'm going to take issue with this. No, it's not. Let me explain why. So what I often hear from people is they say, and I'm not saying this is what Christian said, is they'll say something like 2FA via SMS is worse than no 2FA at all. It's like you can't have like a username and a password alone, and then suddenly you have a username and a password and an SMS, and that is worse. That doesn't make any sense. it is always better to add more things. Oh, incidentally, I tweeted something this week where a customer service rep was arguing on Twitter that a username and password is basically 2FA because you have a username and a password. True story, it's in my tweets. Anyway, thing around SMS. Now, people don't like SMS for a couple of reasons. Now, one is that we have SIM hijacking. SIM hijacking happens. It happens enough that it makes enough news. It is a very targeted attack. It is someone saying, I want this person, and I'm going to get their SIM, and I'm going to socially engineer a telco to port the number or something like that. It's very targeted. SMS via 2FA, 2FA via SMS, solves the problem of things like credential stuffing, which is just like spray and pray, massive, massive attacks. SMS also has the risk of phishing. So we can have an SMS sent to someone, phishing, social engineering. So we can have an SMS sent to someone and then the attacker socially engineers the one-time password out of someone. We have the same issue with soft tokens. We have the same issue with hard tokens. This is why we have U2F, because U2F is not socially engineerable or phishable in the same way as those other factors. The thing that SMS has going for it, and we cannot discount this, and this is kind of why I'm arguing with you a little bit, Christian, that the thing it has really, really going for it is usability. If I take my parents as an example again, if I have to explain how to use Authy, and then I have to walk them through the process of making sure that they back Authy up, and then they migrate Authy to their new phone, there's a whole bunch of things that can go wrong there. If they just need to get a text message, new phone, new software, whatever, it doesn't matter. It migrates with them, because so long as they have access to the phone number, then that's it. That creates weaknesses as well. But the point I'm making is that in some cases, like my mum and dad, I think the best that I can probably hope for is SMS 2FA. And that is better than not having 2FA at all. What kind of boat does your neighbor have? The boat just there. It's a little tinny. I'm not sure it's got an outboard. The neighbors are very, very good friends, but I've never been out on their boat. I have a wakeboarding boat. So my boat, which is kind of half uncovered, is over there. So that's me. So I go out wakeboarding, wake surfing a lot on that. In fact, I'm going to go to the wake park, I think, as soon as I get off this live stream. but it's the climate for this. And incidentally, for people like looking at the environment here, so it's 26 degrees at the moment. It's a UV of 11, which is like the maximum. It only goes up to 11. And normally we're just starting to get into the 30 degree days. We had 32 the other day. So as we get into summer in a few weeks' time, it's basically averaging out at like 30, 30 and a bit every day. Okay, what else we got in here? Did the server selling the breach data as a service contact the websites and breach data from? So did the sit 0 day operators contact the breach services? Almost certainly no. They're not, as I understand it, what you'd refer to as stand-up guys. So obviously, they were running a very, very shady service. They're not going out there doing disclosure. If they did do disclosure, it would devalue their service, because their service is more valuable when they've got credentials that haven't been changed, which is what happens when there are disclosure notices that get sent out to impacted parties. Okay, what else we got in here? Vu, would you ever consider 5G... How do I scroll past that? Would you consider 5G as your home internet connection? Getting similar fiber to the node speeds in Melbourne, but I'm not in an area with 5G yet. It's the capacity limits with mobile plans that's the problem. So I can easily blow through multiple terabytes in a month. I hate to think of how much Telstra would charge me for that. What I would like to do is I would like to have failover such that if NBN goes down, for example, when I'm in the middle of a freaking live stream, I'd like to be able to roll over to 5G. That's something that there are some things in the works on. I'm going to be able to talk about those later on. I don't think that's something we should talk about at the moment. Trust me. All right, what else written here? If your service emailed me the breach password in plain text form, I could locate the service that was breached using a password manager. All right, so imagine this, right? Because I often get this. People say, well, can you send me the password that I used? So you want me in Have I Been Pwned to basically sit on all of the data that's just been leaked and is inevitably causing a whole bunch of damage from sit 0 day, because this is what it would take. I would have to be sitting on the email addresses and the plain text passwords, and they'd have to be somewhere in the online service, and then I'd be sending them out via email, and you should never do that with passwords. And the only way to properly store passwords is in a way where they're not going to be retrievable and usable anyway. They'd only be verifiable by someone entering their password. So, you know, should I go through and like bcrypt everything and then give someone a box that they can type their passwords in to check? Then I'm asking everyone to enter their passwords into my website, which also isn't a very good idea. So these are the challenges that keep me up at night. We don't have a good answer for that yet. Alrighty. Curious your thoughts on Apple Silicon. I'm not sure what Apple Silicon is, but let me talk about the watch anyway, since it came up. So I did get the new watch, the version 6. I got the titanium one, which is why it took a little bit longer to come. If I'm honest, it's the same as the steel version 4 I have. It looks the same. I did skip a version somewhere in there. It's quite nice actually having the screen always on. I know people with the V5 have had that. The Solo Loop, I'm not sure if that's what he was referring to, but the Solo Loop, which I ordered, was 2 sizes too large. So I went into an Apple store yesterday, which was an absolute bloody nightmare. I went in with my daughter into Robina for the Gold Coast folks. Store, very lightly empty. Bollards and things out the front. As I've said before, the only time I've ever had to wear a mask during this pandemic is going into an Apple store. And the reason, before you will lose your collective minds about it, is we just simply have no cases of COVID here. There's like 5 or 6 and they're all in hotel quarantine. So masks just aren't a thing. But you have to go into the Apple store. The thing's almost empty. And the guy's like, if you come back in 3 hours, we can let you in. Anyway, I was very polite to him. I managed to get in and change it. So I'd ordered a size 8 with the little test tool. It was way too big. I got a size 6. I couldn't get it in the braid. Unfortunately, I could only get a size 6 in the silicon. So I got that. And as you can see, I haven't actually put it on yet, but I'll give that a go later on. It is actually quite nice to slide that on. I'm wondering how it would go, particularly in things like the wake park. The reason I got this is that when I hit the water hard, it doesn't come off. So I think the Solo Loop might be good at that as well. Okay, what else have we got here in the comments? MS Authenticator backs up your accounts. Dr. Blue, truly paradise. It is. So the last thing I'll talk about, why I'm trying to make all this stuff work via mobile as well. So we've decided to take a pretty extended holiday with the kids, and then the kids will come back and spend time with their mum, and Charlotte and I will go on and see other things as well. Now, I had wanted to see more of Australia even before the whole COVID thing hit. I spent 242 days, I think, last year traveling, the vast majority of it overseas. So I really wanted just to see more of Oz. So we're going to be spending a lot of time with the kids in Far North Queensland doing the things that you do there. So Far North Queensland, for folks that aren't familiar with that, means things like the Great Barrier Reef, it's crocodiles, it's rainforests, it's barramundi fishing, stuff like that. So we'll be doing a bunch of that. Spend some time there with my parents as well, send the kids home with them, and then we'll go on and do other things, which I'll talk about more later on. But there is going to be a very, very sizable road trip. There's going to be, I think we might end up putting about 10,000 kilometres on the car over the course of the holiday. But anyway, that's why I wanted to get all this mobile recording stuff sorted out as well. And I'm going to go back and watch this live stream later on. If you have comments about this, probably Twitter's best. Things that work well with this setup, is the audio okay? It's the same video. Is the bandwidth okay? I'm curious to hear that. Just so that I can make this as good as I can. And then as I travel, I'll try and do this from some epic spots, because I'm going to see some absolutely amazing things over the course of these holidays. So thanks very much for tuning in. Josh King says the audio is great. That's good, mate. I really appreciate that. I wasn't sure if I had it all right. I did do a little test record earlier on, a little test live stream that wasn't public, and checked it, and it seemed okay. But I'm really, really happy to know it worked all right. So thank you very much for watching. Next week, I think I'll be back up in my office where it's a little bit cooler. I'm going to kill this live stream, and I think I'm going to go and hit that wake park. Thanks for watching, folks. See ya.